This is XTP Media.
So I felt that it was educational. I learned a lot from reading it, but also it was entertaining. It's got loads of great stories in it. And believe me, it covers everything.
Welcome to the latest episode of Extended. For takeoff. So, here are your hosts, Peter Johnson from XTP Media, Gareth Stringer from Global Aviation Resource, and Tim Robinson from the Royal Aeronautical Society.
Hello there, I'm Peter Johnson, and welcome to episode 97 of Aerospace Radio Station Extended. And today, I welcome back Gareth Stringer, who's the Managing Editor at Global Aviation Resource. Gareth, how are you?
I'm good, Peter. How are you? Hope everyone listening is well. It's been far too long.
Yeah, we've been away. You've had a bit of surgery. How are things?
It's fine. It's second one in less than 12 months on the same shoulder. But yeah, back at the time of recording, I'm going back to work in a few days. And yeah, it's okay. I shall keep recovering. Let's put it that way.
Okay, listen, before I come back to you, just to talk very briefly about the Tucano.
Sure.
Let's introduce the show. It's all about aviation and aerospace books today. We've got over 50 books that are reviewed and mentioned, and we've got 7 authors who have sent us in an audio recording of their books. We've got 2 book group reviewers who send us reviews of their best books for 2019. We also have a special insert from Mick Oakey at the Aviation Historian, not only mentioning great books from this year, but also the process they take to review books, so that's worth having a listen to as well. We're very grateful to John at Grub Street Books, who provided us with several review copies for this episode, and of course to Jay at Font Hill, who is a great supporter of the show as well. Now, because there are so many great books for us to talk about, we've tried to put links to every one of them in the show notes in this episode. So go over to our webpage, and you should also be able to pick the notes up in your podcast player's notes. So you should be able to access them directly. So before we talk about books, let's just have a quick check-in, because we were going to record a month or two ago. But Gareth, you were going to talk very briefly about the Tucano.
Yeah, another retirement for the UK military service. But you know, like Tornado earlier this year, another aircraft that really had a sterling, lengthy career. You know, 30 odd years of service with the Royal Air Force as an advanced trainer. And yeah, it will be, you know, it would be strange not to see Tucanos sort of buzzing around the skies anymore, particularly at the very, very lovely, I have to say, RAF Linton on Ouse, which was an amazing station, a beautiful place, you know, in the Vale of York, sort of old style World War II airfield. Great people there as well. We were lucky enough to visit there a few times to talk about Tucano and Tucano display for Global Aviation Resource. So sorry to see the aircraft go, albeit we have the T6, the Texan, who's now replacing it at RAF Valley. And but sorry to see RAF Linton on Ouse go as well. That's for sure.
Yeah. And of course, episode 1 had Bondi, of course, who was at the time, was he the display pilot?
Yes, he was, and yeah. He's still, if he's listening, he's still due to talk to me about the Red Arrows, and sort it out, Bondi. I know you've been quite busy in America and everything, so we'll maybe let you off for the summer, but yeah, he was the Tucano display pilot, went on to fly the Typhoon, as of course so many Tucano pilots will have done in the last few years, because if you reached Tucano, you'd already been streamed to go for Fastjet in the sort of latter part of its career. So, you know, it was Tornado or Typhoon at the end, I suppose. And trained a lot of pilots, and there'll be a lot of people who look back quite fondly on their time on the Tucano. It's an important stepping stone. I'm sure the Texan will be as well.
Yeah, it's such a good looker though, the Tucano as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, and as we saw with a couple of the display seasons when they painted them in World War II markings, you know, little bit Spitfire-like, dare I say it. I'm sure the colour scheme helped with that. But, very sort of distinctive monoplane, very distinctive sound as well. And, they were sort of all hand-built as well. They were all different sizes and all those sorts of things, which were quite interesting. Every aircraft on the line was different, I'm led to believe. And
is there any indication of what's happening to the airframes?
I'm not entirely sure at the time of recording. There are, of course, Tucanos operating elsewhere, and in America, they are operated privately. There's some ex Royal Air Force airframes already gone over to the States and been bought by private owners. And of note, some people may have heard of James Horner, who's a Oscar-winning composer. He actually died when the Tucano he was flying crashed in California a few years ago. So it may well be that these we haven't seen the last of these airframes yet.
Yeah, well, sad to see them go, but a new era dawns, so looking forward to that too. Okay, thanks for that, Gareth. Let's start talking books then. Now, we've tried to find the easiest way of doing this, and there is no easy way. So what we've decided to do is listen to some of the authors and some of the reviewers, and then have a chat and a debrief in between. So we're going to start off with Owen Zupp, a recent guest on the show, but this time writing about the 747, the Queen of the Skies, and his experiences and some great anecdotes from flying that aircraft. We also get to hear Larry Jerome Croft, who again was a guest on our Falklands special episode, and he talks about the Westland Wasp as well, which is a great little aircraft. And finally, in this first batch, Santiago Rivas on his latest book on the Skyhawks. So let's kick off with Owen.
Hi, my name's Owen Zupp, and Peter has kindly asked me to say a few words about my latest aviation book titled Boeing 747, Queen of the Skies. In this book, I've tried to offer a perspective of not frequently seen 747 operations, as well as some reflective thoughts about what it's like to sit on the flight deck of such a legendary aircraft. It's a compilation of many stories. I take in nights where we descended over the Thames, and I think back to those Lancaster crews who flew through that same airspace so many years ago in such a different environment. I also discuss a rocket launch sighted from 37,000 feet as it made its way into low Earth orbit from the airbase at Vandenberg on the United States West Coast. I also consider some of the rarer operations, fifth pod operations, where an engine is ferried beneath the port or left-hand wing. Somewhat unusual sight of a 747 with five engines, and it actually makes up the cover photo for the book. And also, charter flights over the Antarctic. I've titled that chapter Magnificent Desolation because it is quite striking to fly over Antarctica. But I also go into the technical side somewhat, but discuss it in terms that we can all understand easily. If this book sounds of interest, it is online and available through the various book outlets. Or you can contact me directly at my website, which is owenzupp.com. And I hope you enjoy 747 Queen of the Skies as much as I've enjoyed operating that aircraft. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Larry Jerome Croft. I'm a retired Royal Navy helicopter pilot and author. This year, I published a book entitled The Royal Navy Wasp, An Operational and Retirement History. The book is available through Pen and Sword and also available on Amazon. The book itself is an account of the Wasp helicopter, the first successful small ship's aircraft ever to be deployed, and a groundbreaking machine, courtesy of the Royal Navy in the 50s and early 60s. The book is mainly accounts by people who flew the aeroplane itself in various theatres of operation, including the Cod Wars and particularly the Falklands War, but I also have accounts of all sorts of operations around the world. The idea is to give you a feeling of what it's actually like to operate that aeroplane at sea. In addition, there's a second part of this book, co-written by Wing Commander Terry Martin, who actually owns a serviceable Wasp and flies it every year during the display season. You can see accounts of his operations on his Facebook page, Westland Wasp Historic Flight. He has provided a section to the book telling us about all the operations of the aircraft in other navies around the world, as well as those that are still flying today. So it balances out the old operational Navy stuff with what the aeroplanes, and there are about six of them still, are doing as we speak. I hope you enjoy the book. As I said, it's available through Pen and Sword and on Amazon, and would make a great Christmas present for anybody interested in historic aircraft. Once again, thank you.
Hello, my name is Santiago Rivas, and I would like to tell you about my next book, Skyhawks Over the South Atlantic, to be published soon by Elion & Company in the UK. It's a new work based on what my research about the Falklands War and the Skyhawks in the Argentine Air Force and Navy. In this case, this book tells not only about the operations during the war, but also has an introduction about their service story with the Argentine Air Force and also with the Argentine Navy before the war, the deployments during the crisis with Chile before the war too, and also has an aftermath about the operations after the war till the end of their career. The main part of the book, which is related to the Falklands War, I added new interviews that are not on my previous publications about the topic, with some veterans from both sides, including many pilots and also British veterans, that they add their story to what was already published before in other media. So this book has a lot of unknown information not released before. And I think you will enjoy it with all this new material. Also related with my publications, this year I also published a new book, which is in this case with Cressy Publishing, also from the UK, which is the British combat aircraft in Latin America. This book is also dedicated to all the British types that served in Latin America, not only combat aircraft, despite the book is focused mostly on them, but also we decided to include the transport, helicopters, trainers, and all the other types of aircraft. In this case, I put all the stories on the aircraft, like the Canberras, Gloster Meteors, Vampires, Jaguars, and many other types that served in Latin America. This is a huge volume of more than 600 pages, which was released this year in June and is currently available. I think I hope that you will enjoy both books. The one with Elion is to be released in very few days. We are finishing now the layout, so you can enjoy it very soon. I hope you like it. Bye-bye.
Okay, Gareth. Owen's doing really well with the Queen of the Skies book. I know the Wasp book is starting to pick up pace, but Santiago Rivas seems to be picking up some interest, particularly on the Argentine Skyhawks book.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I guess we've all read, or many of us will have read lots about the other side of the story, of course.
Yeah.
And to maybe get the in-depth look at the Argentine side of the story is absolutely fascinating. That's not one I've read myself, but that would definitely be on my list to tackle that one at some point, no question.
Yeah, it has only just come out, and I think his other book, The British Combat Aircraft in Latin America, is also out. Now, that is definitely one I want to pick up. I did read Wings Over the Malvinas, and of course we had Santiago on our Falklands episode talking about that, but yeah. I have to say that his books are some of the best books that I've read. So I've heard great reviews of British combat aircraft in Latin America, 600 plus photographs, so a nice healthy big book to go on your bookshelf. So looking forward to seeing that.
No, definitely. And as for the Queen of the Skies, I mean, just on the subject matter, you know, they're starting to go, folks. You know, they are they are being retired just on the day we are recording. You know, a BA or XBA 747 has flown all the way from Cardiff to St Athan, I think about 10 minutes, and that is to be broken up, I believe. And, you know, they are going to start going. And, God, we'll miss them when they're gone. I'm sure it'll be a little while yet before there's nothing, but they're certainly going to become rarer and rarer.
Yeah, I can remember I didn't fly on too many. I've only maybe four or five 747s, but I just remember when they were so common about Heathrow and Gatwick and, yeah, and Manchester and places like that. And now when you see a 747, it's special. So yeah, real shame.
I'm going to Florida next September. We're flying with Virgin, and that flight has already been allocated to 747 out of Manchester.
Okay.
So I think it's 2021 the Virgin ones are going. So you know, kind of just in time kind of thing to get a last trip in. So that'll be quite nice.
Yeah, great aircraft. Right, let's crack on with some other introductions. We've got a couple more authors, Matt Falkus from Destin Publishing and our good friend Matt Willis from Naval Air History. So Matt Falkus gets to talk about the airport spotting guides, and Matt talks about his latest fiction books. So take it away, Matt.
Hi there, it's Matt Falkus from Destin World Publishing here. We've got a few new books for the aviation spotter community, which are going to be great for your hobby in 2020. First up, it's Airport Spotting Guides USA, which was recently updated. It covers where to spot over 430 US airports. We've also got Airport Spotting Guides Asia and Far East, which covers hundreds of airports across 24 different Asian countries. Then there's Airport Spotting Guides Europe, also recently updated. It includes every major airport in Europe. With each of these books, you'll learn where the best spotting locations are for logging aircraft, for photography. You'll learn where the best spotting hotels are and aviation museums. They really are great guides to take with you on your spotting trips or for using to plan trips. Finally, we've got a new airliner reference guide, which covers all the important dates, statistics and history of different airliners since the 1930s. It's full of interesting facts. This book's called Flying Firsts, and it's by Martin Cartledge. All of these books are available to order now. Simply head to destinworld.com or Amazon, and you can follow us at airportspotting.com.
Hello, my name's Matthew Willis. I'm here to talk about the books Harpoon and Bastion, which are part of my Malta series of novellas. These are short fiction books of around 100 pages, published by Sharp Books. That's Sharp with an E. They're based very closely on the history of the Royal Navy's efforts to relieve the besieged island of Malta in the summer of 1942. Writing them involved a lot of research of historical evidence and using accounts from the people who were actually there to make it as authentic as humanly possible. But these are fictional stories. I wanted to write books that would put the reader inside the head of a naval fighter pilot in the way it's harder to do with non-fiction books, and also tell a rattling good story if I could. The main character is a Sea Hurricane pilot called Edmund Clydesdale, who's flying from HMS Eagle during the convoy codenamed Operation Harpoon when we meet him in June 1942. At this time, he's struggling with a secret. He's just one kill short of becoming an ace, but due to a series of mistakes and misinterpretations, he shouldn't be. The Navy was quite slow to recognise the idea of the ace, and in the book they're making up for lost time by plastering Clydesdale with publicity. The first book, Harpoon, follows Clydesdale as he struggles with this, and not to mention struggling with the massed forces of the Italian and German air forces, who are collectively desperate to stop the convoy getting to Malta. But the convoy doesn't have enough air cover, and its fighters are mostly out of date and worn out. The consequences of failure couldn't be more serious, so there's a lot at stake. The second book, Bastion, is set on Malta itself in July 1942. I won't give away how Edmund gets there, but once again, it's all based on very closely on real history. Clydesdale is borrowed for a few weeks to help the Royal Navy Air Squadron with air-sea rescue missions. Now, this squadron in real life had a few old Hurricanes, partly to help scout for the air-sea rescue launches and partly to protect them from attack by enemy aircraft, which did happen on one or two occasions. While Clydesdale is there, he meets some interesting characters, including a pilot called Godden, who's something of a loose cannon, and has some ideas for the Hurricanes that go a lot further than just using them for air-sea rescue. The book culminates with an extremely risky mission over enemy territory, which becomes even more risky than it should be for reasons I won't go into here. I'm working on the third book at the moment, but the first two can be found on Amazon in Kindle or paperback, and they might make an excellent gift for the aviation enthusiast in your life.
Gareth, let's just kick off then with Matt Falkus on the airport spotting guides. Lucky enough to have a handful of these, and I pull them out every now and then when I go to certain airports to see what's going on. But what I really did like as well is his other book, Flying First. So that's another one that's added to my list. I think, listeners, by the end of this show, you will have a healthy list. Wish list going on. That's one that's been added to mine. Did you ever spot when you were younger?
Yeah, I did. I mean, not on a sort of religious going to get numbers or anything like that, but my dad would take me out. So we lived in Hertfordshire, and I was I was very much a sort of military enthusiast. There wasn't really anything on our doorstep, but my local, in inverted commas, which would have been probably about an hour's drive from home, would have been RAF Alconbury. So my first trips out with my dad, you know, would have been in sort of school holidays, would have been to see the RF4C Phantoms, TR1s and F5s at Alconbury. And we holidayed a lot in East Anglia, so Coltishall, Wattisham, Lakenheath, Mildenhall, all those places as well. And I remember when the first sort of guides came up on the internet, how amazing it was. So it's great to see that, you know, there's still books coming out, because, you know, it couldn't be anything handier really than chucking something in your glove box or your camera bag or whatever. So you've just got it there. You know, you might be out and about and find yourself near somewhere you weren't expecting, and if you've got the if that's covered in the book, it's brilliant. Very handy.
No, it is, and they're worldwide, so cover all parts of the world, so well worth getting, particularly if you travel. Now let's talk about Matt Willis's books, because Matt, as we know, is a pretty decent historian, but he's turned his hand to fiction writing. And I did have a brief discussion with Matt about this, because I'm not really very hot on aviation fiction books. I just can't get into them. Where do you stand on it?
Okay, I think I'm probably kind of with you. There are some titles that I've read and absolutely loved. Stephen Kuntz books like Fly to the Old Dog is a sort of classic. There's some older ones. Richard Bark is an amazing author. There's a book called Strangers to the Ground, The Shepherd. I could highly recommend both of those. But yeah, Dave Gledhill, another previous guest on the show, has also written some fiction. I've read one of his books, and that was absolutely brilliant. And, you know, that comes from an incredible sort of technical background. Matt's comes from a strong historical background. I haven't read them. I will admit that here and now. But, I might give him a go. I might give him a go.
He's got one more to come out. That's just about to come out. So once the three are out, it's called a novella as well. I learned something new talking to Matt about the collection of books. There you go. A bit of a philosophy.
It's like a short novel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's also got two historical books out. The Blackburn Shark, which is, I think, due out in December. But the one I'm looking forward to, predominantly because it is Matt writing about it, is Fleet Air Arm Legends book about the Supermarine Seafire.
Yeah, that'll be brilliant. And you've already said Matt's historical background, Peter, is second to none. The pedigree there, and he's writing from a historical, from a non-fiction point of view, CFAR's a wonderful aircraft.
Yeah, to be fair, I don't know a great deal about it, so I'm looking forward to that. That's definitely one on my list. Okay, should we talk a little bit about some of the books we've read? I got a handful. So shall I kick off and then I'll come back to you? The first one I've got is Heathrow Airport, 70 Years and Counting. Now, how did you
find this? I don't know masses about Heathrow, I have to confess. Right. So you're now going to be able to give me the potted history.
Put me on the spot, you love it. So this is by Kevin James, and I did interview Kevin, I want to say 2 years ago now, because this is the second edition of this book, and I've read his other books, and it's fair to say I like his style, not just because I've met him and we've had him on the show and that sort of thing, but he writes with a very honest style. So this book is all about the evolution of Heathrow Airport. It's not a historical book, although it covers the history. But what he does, and particularly as Heathrow goes through the 60s, 70s, 80s and 90s, he brings in anecdotes and stories from people who've worked at the airport or travelled through the airport. And I found that quite gripping. It was probably because I'm close to it. It was a time I was involved in spotting and photographing and things like that. So I liked it from that. But this latest edition has got, excuse me, 3 new chapters.
Yeah.
And it brings the book right up to date, of course, since he issued the first edition. We've had the news on the third runway. There's obviously the great debate about air quality and that sort of thing going on. So he brings it right up to speed. Now, I'm not a great person for reading books twice, not unless they're technical books where I'm referencing them. But I actually read this through a second time over. The editing is much better, I must say. However, the only thing, Kevin, I didn't like, you took out some of the pictures, and I'm a bit of a visual individual.
Okay.
So lots of words, and great words, but I would have liked some of the pictures to have stayed. So highly recommend this one if you're into airports and civil aviation. It's published by KGM Today, 260 pages, and it's a hardback. Now, Kevin is an old-time journalist, and one of the things that we talked about is what a book feels like. And he's particularly taken the publication route that gives it a nice feel. It's nice and heavy, and you feel like you've read a proper book. So
yeah.
Well done, Kevin. Really enjoyed that one. Okay, what next? Do you want to talk about Nimrod Boys?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've been in the rather lucky situation of being sort of sat at home for about 6 weeks. So I've been able to work my way through this. It's funny to talk about, you know, how a book feels. This is a hardback book. It's not particularly big, but it's kind of, it's a bit like the TARDIS, you know. There's like there's over 200 pages, and there's a lot in here, and I have to say I really enjoyed it. Now, it was the first thing I saw when I read the bump when you sent it to me was that it was a complimentary book to Tony Blackman's Nimrod Rise and Fall. Now, I hadn't read that. And I would say, don't let that put you off if you haven't read it, because this, as a standalone book, is, if you're interested in Nimrod and what it did and the people who did it, will keep you more than happy. It's absolutely fascinating. It's got, it ticks the sort of two boxes that I always like. So I felt that it was educational. I learned a lot from reading it, but also it was entertaining. It's got loads of great stories in it. And believe me, it covers everything you can imagine. So it's got early Nimrod operations. It's got the Falklands. It's got 51 squadrons, you know, rather secretive Nimrods in it, the R1. And it literally goes right through to Iraq. And obviously, the other thing I thought was quite timely is we are not too far away from the Poseidon being delivered, you know, well, they've already been delivered, but coming over to Lossiemouth where they're going to be based. And of course, we haven't had any of this capability since Nimrod went out of service
bizarre,
in 2010, which was that's a different subject altogether. But it's a classic aircraft, and I have to say, this book I think really, really does it justice. Oh, and I must just say, because you mentioned it as well, great pictures as well. It's got a section of color images which are really nice, but also dotted throughout there's maps and black and white and other color images to illustrate in every chapter as well. So good stuff. That's a Grub Street book. Very well done.
John and the team do produce some really good stuff, actually. Is the word iconic used too often? I mean, the Nimrod is, it's just unique, isn't it, really? I mean, the airframe, its history, everything.
I think, is it an icon? I don't know. We need Tim here to debate that one. That's far.
Okay. Right.
It's probably not far off.
Okay. Maybe it's just because it's British and I'm sentimental that way. Okay. Here's another one from Grub Street. Now, again, I often struggle a little bit with certain sectors and topics. So I've got a confession to make. This is called DH9 From Ruin to Restoration. It's by Guy Black. For those of you who don't know who Guy Black is, look up the Historic Aircraft Collection. Probably one of the best restorers around, and certainly in recent years. And this is all about two DH9 First World War bombers. And he heard a rumour back in 2000 of aircraft parts being found in a Maharaja's palace in India, in a place called Bikaner in Rajasthan. And through some investigation, through some visits, and he's a very good writer, so you get the warts and all journey travelling to places where, you know, tummy upsets and things like that occur. So it's a great read of how he then discovers these two airframes in pieces in very, very poor condition. But what he realizes really, really quickly is there are none of these existing in this country. And he sets about repatriating them. He has to buy them and he has to bring them back. And the whole story of him buying and returning them to the UK is worth the book price just on its own.
This sounds more like it could be a fiction, like a sort of boys' adventure tale.
I don't want to give too much away on the book. Let me cover the technical side first. He covers the history of the aircraft type, talks about the engines in a fair bit of detail. Now, I'm not a World War One aircraft fan at all. And that's probably because I'm rather ignorant about it. But I did find the book absolutely fascinating. And as I said, the journey to return them to the UK is just amazing. Some friends help him eventually get out there. He's not well. So some friends help him. They get it packed up in these boxes. They put him on these rickety old vehicles to travel down to get on the ship and get ferried, or the aircraft, and get ferried back. And because they're so badly decayed, apparently these guys driving these trucks at 7 or 8 miles an hour have to stop every night and overnight. And because there was a lack of firewood, they simply went into the containers and took bits of the bits of these 100-year-old aircraft and had themselves a little bonfire and a cook-up. So that's just one of the things he has to overcome on getting these airframes back. But the most amazing thing is not only does he restore one, which is actually on display at the Imperial War Museum in Duxford, but he does return one of these airframes to flight. And on the 13th of May this year, they returned the only World War One bomber to flying status. So
amazing.
It's a fantastic story, full of photographs, 190 plus pages, lots of colour pictures, lots of technical detail. So if you're into that, that's all in there. But it's a great story. It's a great read. So if you, like me, are a little ignorant on World War One aircraft and you want to pick up a book and learn a little bit more, try this. DH9 From Ruin to Restoration by Guy Black.
I tell you what, I don't know about the listeners. My little list is going to be getting longer.
Yeah. Now, I have to make a little confession here because I haven't finished this last book. And this one is called Stuka Attack, the Dive Bombing Assault on England During the Battle of Britain. It's Andy Saunders. Yeah, I think I should have sent this one to Tim, but I knew he'd want it too badly, so I kept it myself. So, of course, we all know about this Stuka, and that is very much an iconic weapon of World War II. But what isn't so clear, and has not really been covered in too much detail, is its role in the Battle of Britain. And this book covers that. I'm halfway through, but I've also done a little bit of peeking towards the end. Great photos. 224 pages was released only this month in the USA and Canada. It's been out for a few weeks longer in the UK. But at the back of the book, it has a massive amount of technical detail on flights, accidents, incidents, the airframes, and as I said, all wrapped up in great commentary and great pictures. So I'm halfway through that, but what I've read so far, highly recommend that one. So that's a Grub Street book as well. So if you go over to Grub Street, I'm not sure if this is one of them, but they're doing some fantastic offers on signed copies of their books at the moment. So if you're looking for something special for Christmas and you want your partner to buy you that special something, go look them up, because there's some great offers on there for signed books.
Well, that's another good shout.
Yeah. So those are the ones we've got. Let's take a break. Then after the break, we're going to go to the first of our book reviewers, and this is going to be Andy Wright. Now, Andy runs the Aircrew Book Review blog, and that's aircrewbookreview.blogspot.com. He's got a very, very good Facebook page as well. And what this guy doesn't know about World War II aviation is he's just fantastic. Writes very, very good reviews. So let's hear Andy and what he has to say.
From across the globe, from the centre of aerospace, and now to you.
The Royal Aeronautical Society is the world's only professional body dedicated to the entire aerospace community. Established in 1866 to further the art, science and engineering of aeronautics, the Society has remained at the forefront of developments in aerospace. We will bring you multimedia, lectures and discussion from inside the world of aviation, aeronautics and space. If you enjoy our content, please consider showing your support for the Society. If you have an interest in aerospace, find out about the professional and personal benefits that Society membership offers. Visit www.aerosociety.com.
G'day, I'm Dave Homewood of the Wings Over New Zealand show, New Zealand's only regular aviation podcast series. The Wings Over New Zealand show covers all sorts of aviation topics, with a New Zealand flavour but an international appeal. From interviews with veterans and aviation personalities, to topics like military aviation, warbirds, air shows, historians, authors, museums, aviation events, and much, much more. We have an extensive archive of episodes that you can go back to, and there are new episodes coming out all the time. Search for the Wings Over New Zealand show. Oh, and by the way, we love Extended. It's a great show. Well done, guys.
G'day, everyone. This is Andy Wright from Aircrew Book Review. Thanks to the guys at the podcast for the opportunity to talk to you all about some books that have impressed me for 2019. My website concentrates on books by and about aircrew who flew during World War II. That's RAF and Commonwealth aircrew. So the focus is a bit narrow, and as a result, so is what most of my reading is. Some good English there. I'm in Australia, And so a lot of what I'm going to be talking about covers Australian books that have been released this year. We've had a pretty good year, and a bit of Kiwi stuff, but also, of course, I work with English and American, British and American publishers as well. So hopefully I can give you some good variety and some good ideas for Christmas. My website, before I forget, is www.aircrewbookreview.blogspot.com. It can be a bit neglected at times, but there's plenty of material on there. So first of all, probably the saddest news is probably not the greatest place to start with, but author Dennis Newton passed away at the end of September. He had just come back from launching his new book about Bob Bungie, the Australian Spitfire pilot, Battle of Britain, Battle of France, Fairy Battle pilot as well. Bob Bungie came back to Australia, and it's quite a tragic tale in the great scheme of things. But Dennis Newton, in his second last book, has put together a fantastic tribute to the man, with a lot of detail about the Battle of France, which from an Australian point of view is not something you come across too often. Some of you will probably know Dennis Newton from his work with Gordon Olive's memoir, and also the Pat Hughes biography that he wrote several years ago. He's got another book coming out with Amberley in January called Bomber Boy. Once again, he's edited the memoir of Derek French, an Australian bomber pilot who flew Hamdens, Manchesters and Wellingtons over Europe and in Burma and North Africa, I think, from memory. So that's one to look for in the early in the new year. Actually, before I forget, another book that's due out early in the new year is John Bruning's Race of Aces. Now, although I mostly read about RAF and Commonwealth aircrew, anything to do with the Americans in the South Pacific in particular is always of interest because they flew alongside the RAAF. So John has John's latest book, which is due out in January, I'm reading a galley copy at the moment, is, as the name suggests, Race of Aces. It's about the race by leading fighter pilots in New Guinea, so Bong, Maguire, Johnson, Kirby, those sort of guys, to beat Eddie Rickenbacker's World War I score of 26 kills. And General Kenny and Rickenbacker each put up a case of whiskey for the first pilot to make that. And John's gone through a lot of archives, a lot of association group collections and personal collections as well, to draw together how these guys operated, what their backgrounds were, and also really getting inside the heads of them. So that's one to look out for from Hachette early in January. I think it's about January the 20th it's due out. That's Race of Aces by John Bruning. Very, very well done. I'm about halfway through, so I know how it ends, but it's still fascinating to get down into the detail of these things. Here in Australia, well, actually speaking of the Americans, again, before I forget, Kangaroo Squadron by Bruce Gamble was one of my early reads this year. That's about the first flying fortresses in Australia, the American ones to operate against the Japanese out of Australia and then from New Guinea. And they're fight for supplies, being at the end of a long supply chain after the retreat from the East Indies, Dutch East Indies. That's, as usual with Bruce Gamble, like with John Bruning, it's an incredibly reliable and detailed book, and one of those that you won't struggle to, or you will struggle to put down, and something a bit different. If you like your flying fortresses, there's some early ones for you. Here in Australia, we've had a very good year, particularly in the middle of the year. There was a flurry of book releases. Funnily enough, it coincided with the inaugural RAAF publishing symposium put on by the RAAF's History and Heritage branch, which was attended by over 100 delegates in Canberra back in July. And around about that time, there were several books that came out, one of which was Tony Brady's The Empire Has an Answer, which is a look at the Australian reporting of the Empire Air Training Scheme, so a lot of reference to newspapers of the period and dragging out the stories of a lot of the individuals, but also a good look at the organisation of the scheme here in Australia. There was also RAAF Black Cats, talking a bit by Bob Cleworth and John Souter Linton. Sorry, I'm just turning my head so I can see the book. That's about the RAAF's long range, so we're talking over it, 12, 15, 16, 18 hour flights to drop mines in Japanese held harbours at night, of course, so which required pinpoint navigation and meter perfect drops to bottle up the harbours. It's a fairly well known aspect of Catalina operations down here in Australia, but a lot of the detail was not known, including the close working relationship with the United States Navy. And so this book is a fantastic narrative of those operations. Of course, the Catalinas were lightened, so the amphibians had their undercarriage removed. There was no armour, no self-sealing tanks, so they were lightened as much as possible to fly as far as possible. And if you know about Catalinas, it's not terribly fast. So those guys went through a long, hard grind. And that, Bob Cleworth is an Australian Catalina aficionado. He's probably the leading authority on RFF Catalina operations. That's a fantastic book for him. I'll say fantastic a lot, but it's true. That's a book from Allen and Unwin down here in Australia, so that should appear in the Northern Hemisphere before too long. Michael Veitch, again, another Hachette book before John Bruning's one comes out next year. Michael Veitch has written Turning Point, which is about the Australians and a small American force turning back the Japanese landings at Milne Bay on the eastern tip of New Guinea. It wasn't Papua New Guinea then, it was just New Guinea. If you've heard about RFF Kitty Hawks taking off and firing their guns into the jungle as the undercarriage retracted, that's Milne Bay. So Michael Veitch, a follow-on from his 44 Days book, which is the 75 Squadron's 44 Days in the defence of Port Moresby, in 1942, this is his follow-on, the Milne Bay defence. And as always, it's a very engaging narrative. And happily, for these books, they get wide distribution here in Australia. So hopefully the same applies elsewhere. Going on to UK publishers, Fighting High, Steve Darlow's publishing house, has had a fairly quiet year this year. But if you have a look at what they've been putting on social media, you'll understand that he's been involved in some stage plays or stage productions relating to bomber crew experiences, that sort of thing, and he continues to work along those lines as well. But the one relevant book that I've been particularly impressed with this year was Bomber Pilot, which is, of course, Cheshire's biography, which we're all very familiar with. This one includes a commentary by Robert Owen, Dr. Robert Owen, who knows his stuff inside out and back to front. So that adds another aspect to Cheshire's story. If you might recall, Robert Owen wrote Henry Maudsley, Dambuster, which was an incredibly detailed biography of that pilot. Pen and Sword, of course, has ripped out a ton of books, and of course they are generally all very good. My highlights have been A Spy in the Sky and Coastal Command Heroes. Coastal Command Heroes is by Andrew Bird, and it is a good look at, you know, your Mosquito and Bowfighter pilots, and of course Sunderlands and Catalinas and that sort of thing. So he's with his Separate Little War and Coastal Dawn, he's probably the leading authority of Coastal Command stories, which I always enjoy, I can tell you that. And Spy in the Sky was by Kenneth Johnson, which of course is a Spitfire PR story. And again, although not a huge book, very, very engaging and hard to put down. Coming back to Australia and New Zealand, Avonmore Books in South Australia has released South Pacific Air War Volume 3, which is the last of the trilogy, well, apparently the last of the three. There has been some rumours of another one, about air activity in the first half of 1942. That's included a lot of detail with a lot of reference from both sides of the conflict. So there's a lot of where claims are made. There's reference to what the actual Japanese losses were, and of course the Japanese were very good at massively overclaiming as well. So there's a lot of correlation and a lot of detail. Considering these books are not, 500 pages thick, the amount of detail included in roughly 250 pages is just phenomenal. And if you can get hold of those three volumes, I believe Casemate distributes them in the UK. That's Avonmore Books, South Pacific Air War Volumes 1, 2 and 3. they are very worth getting hold of. And from a New Zealand perspective, probably my favourite book, which I haven't read this edition, but I read the previous one, was from Bomber Command Books, Phil Lamerson's story, I Would Not Step Back. The Phil Lamerson Trust, about 18 months, 2 years ago, produced a very big book, landscape hardback, very heavy, about and very well illustrated story about Phil Lamerson, the bomber pilot who ended up in a concentration camp with a lot of other Allied airmen, basically had to stand up to the Germans to stop them all being executed. So that's it's a fascinating yet sobering book, of course, and just has you on the edge of the seat, or edge of your seat. Bomber Command Books with the Phil Lamerson Trust did the smart thing and put together a small paperback, an easily postable paperback, as opposed to the big, thick, heavy hardback from New Zealand. In closing, I should say one of my favourite books this year as well, it's just a non-stop list, really, The Dawn of Carrier Strike by David Hobbs from Seaforth Publishing, one of Pen and Swords imprints. Absolutely just phenomenal. He is, with apologies to Matt Willis, who I'll mention shortly, he is the preeminent naval aviation historian. And this book, which deals with the early stages of the Fleet Air Arms War over Norway, and concentrates on one particular pilot, Lucy, D-S-O-R-N, the Fleet Air Arms first ace and a dive bomber pilot. His involvement with pre-war carrier aviation as well. It's just, as always from Hobbs, it's just, yeah, you cannot do any better. And I mentioned Matt Willis earlier. He's released a couple of fiction books, novellas more than anything, Harpoon and Bastion, so far this year, or I think maybe Harpoon might have come out late last year, and they are very quick reads, but with his pedigree and when you're talking Fleet Air Arm action in Malta, Matt knows his stuff, and they're very, very good little reads if you want to break from the non-fiction side of things, which I often do, but can't stray too far away from World War II aviation. And finally, two books here in Australia that aren't what I usually read, but Owen Zupp's Boeing 747 Queen of the Skies, Recollections from the Flight Deck, is a nice little 80-page book that did really well digitally, so it's come out in soft cover, and that's just a good little summation of the flying the 747, particularly for Qantas. And Rod Lovell's also recently released From Hero to Zero, which details his ditching of a DC-3 off Sydney Airport in the 90s, early 90s, and the subsequent successful ditching, which saved 25 lives. Unfortunately, he was hauled over the coals by the authorities afterwards and blamed for everything, when the reality was the aircraft was not performing as it should have been anyway. But he has a very, very long career in flying, RAAF, Mirage pilot, Orions, his own Tiger Moths and Beech 18s, that sort of thing. Incredible aviator, and probably, at the time, would have been probably the best person to be in command of that DC-3 when it went in. So I think if you Google that, From Hero to Zero, Rod Lovell, that'll be a very good read. That's out at the moment and selling quite well. Anyway, that was a bit of a ramble. I apologise. I've got a bit of a cold too, so my breathing's all over the shop. But for Christmas, the best thing you can always do is buy someone a book. Give some hours of pleasure, and really, if it's a book about aviation, even better. All the best for 2020, and I hope this is giving you some ideas. Thanks.
Okay, Gareth, just some fabulous books. When I first listened to what Andy had to say there, listening in when he sent it, he was a bit worried about whether he said too little or too much, but fantastic content there. And I know that it's a bit Australasia focused on some of his content, but he mentioned a book there by Trevor Veach, Michael Veach, Turning Point, The Battle for Milne Bay. I've read one of Michael's books. I read 44 Days, which I think Andy also mentioned, 75 Squadron, The Fight for Australia. Absolutely yep. Brilliant read. Really, really enjoyed reading about that. It's all about the defence of Port Moresby. And again, a little bit of my ignorance, but I didn't realise a lot of these battles were fought so close to Australia. So great heritage there for Michael and his books.
Yeah, and it's, I think it's great to broaden your horizons out a little bit as well, isn't it? It's interesting to read about the sort of the history of aviation, whether it's the war fighting like the example here, or whether it's just the development of aviation across the world, because of course it's happened in different places at different paces, hasn't it? So it's fascinating.
If you don't follow Andy, please follow him, not just for his book content, and he is a seriously avid reader, but his reviews are good and his knowledge on aviation is spectacular. So thanks very much, Andy, for that one. Next over to Mick Oakey from The Aviation Historian. And Mick talks to us about some of the books they've picked up and also talks a little bit about how they go about undertaking book reviews.
Hi, Mick Oakey here, Managing Editor of The Aviation Historian, the quarterly journal that explores the less well-trodden paths of flying history. Our friends at Extended have kindly once again given me a few minutes to talk about our latest issue, TAH 29, which was published on October the 15th. To match the theme of this edition of Extended, I'm going to concentrate on the back end of our issue and talk about books. We regularly devote 5 of our 132 pages to book reviews, a lot more than the mainstream magazines, which means we can review about 10 or a dozen publications in each issue. We publish a mixture of in-depth reviews, typically 500 to 600 words, and what we call books in brief, typically 100 to 120 words. In TAH 29, we've done detailed reviews of Nigel Parker's 3-volume Gotch Strafe England, the German air assault against Great Britain 1914 to 1918, David Hobbs's The Dawn of Carrier Strike, Johannes Kaufmann's An Eagle's Odyssey, My Decade as a Pilot in Hitler's Luftwaffe, and Larry Jeremcroft and Terry Martin's The Royal Navy Wasp, An Operational and Retirement History. They're all good, but our reviewers pull no punches when it comes to pointing out errors or shortcomings. We make a point of reviewing books in a warts-and-all kind of way. Reviews are not, after all, a free advert for the publisher or author, but rather a service to the reader. That said, even if we give a book a proper panning, there is arguably no such thing as bad publicity. No book or magazine is completely perfect, but it means that purchasers can make a properly informed choice. The pick of the bunch is The Dawn of Carrier Strike, which reviewer Matt Willis, himself no mean historian of naval aviation, says provides the most comprehensive and convincing exploration yet attempted of the formative years of British force projection. Our Books in Brief page in this issue covers a variety of recent World War II and Cold War titles, plus an unusual softback, Diecast Aircraft, by Paul Brent Adams, all about diecast models. Our own editor, Nick Stroud, describes it as a veritable mine of fancy-that info about the history, construction and even packaging of predominantly metal-scale aircraft. He adds, you will definitely find yourself saying, oh, I had one of those. All this leaves me with just a few seconds in which to say our new issue's cover story is Professor Keith Hayward's analysis of the procurement of the Hawker Siddeley P1127. We are, by the way, planning to bring Keith's excellent articles together in book form. While other features include the RAF's readiness for war, or lack of it, in 1939, laminar airflow research at around that time, TWA's Martin Skyliners, the first ever commercially available pilot's logbook from 1910, and Sud Aviation's 1958 Super Caravelle project, a kind of nuclear-powered Concorde. Right, time's up. Remember, our journal is not on sale in newsagents, but you can order it online via our website, theaviationhistorian.com. Until next time, then, this is Mick Oakey talking exclusively to Extended.
Pretty good stuff there from Mick, as always. And glad to hear that they review books honestly, Gareth. You know, as a service to readers, not just an advert for the publisher. I get caught up sometimes in doing that. But their customer is the reader, not the publisher.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Peter. And it's a very fair point. I actually bought my dad quite a big stack of books for his 80th, And it was funny, actually. He emailed me a few days after, and he'd started reading one of them, and he'd been flicking through another one that I got him. And he actually said to me, he said, "God, that it was a book on the lightning and the English electric lightning." And he said to me, "The captions are terrible, Gareth." He said, "There's duplicate captions and captions missing and everything." And when I saw him next, I had a proper look through it that I hadn't done in the shop.
Yeah.
And I just thought, oh, God, you know, he was quite right. And I just thought, if I'd read a review of that had said it, I would never have bought it. And I'm pretty sure if I'd read that a review of that book in the Aviation Historian, it would have said that. You know, I'd have been in no doubt at all. So it's you're right. Mick's right. You're telling the person who's bought your publication about the book. You're not writing it for the publisher. So and I think as long as it's constructive, then surely nobody should have any issue with that whatsoever.
Yeah, well, certainly the quality of the Aviation Historian content is always very high, very professional. You've had a look at a few of their recent publications.
Reviews?
Yeah. What do you think of the Aviation Historian itself?
Oh God, it's like getting a book.
When it comes
through in the post. And there's been some. And the other thing, I apart from the fact that the overall standard is very, very high.
Yeah.
The other thing about it, I'm not just saying this because they're sort of friend of the show. I think we are always blatantly honest as well. But so I would highly recommend it because it's got articles in there that you just haven't read before.
Yeah.
You know, and or not read very much about. So, you know, I think the last one was Mirage 3s in Switzerland, and it was absolutely fascinating. It was brilliant, and they're really, really good tales and really well illustrated, and the whole thing is put together really, really nicely. And I have to say, and I'm not putting us up there, I don't want anyone to think I'm putting us up there in a quality point of view, but if Global Aviation Resource was a physical product, that's the sort of thing I would want it to be like.
Yeah, that's a really good shout.
It's so good. And that would be a great gift, a subscription.
Yeah. And just it's saying, not overly expensive either.
No,
don't
and we're
have
not
the
on
price.
Commission. No, we should be. Mick's listening.
Yeah. Oh, he will be. I can assure you. He does tell me, and he gives me honest feedback.
that's good as well.
And do you know what? There's something to be said for that. We do often ask people for feedback on the shows. Do give it to us. Don't be afraid. Do tell us. If you don't like something, tell us. But also, if you do like something, tell us. Because otherwise, we'll go on in complete ignorance of anybody churning out this stuff, and you may not like it. So do give us that feedback. Anyway, let's...
There's nothing worse than doing it to a vacuum. We know you're listening, so tell us what you think of it.
Yeah, all one of you.
Both of you.
No, my mum did say she'd download this one specially, so
thanks, mum.
Right, let's move on to our next book review club. This is the Aviation Enthusiasts Book Club, of course, on Facebook. Simon has done nothing short of a spectacular job in getting the book club on Facebook organized. The quality of people's contributions is always very high. It's very civil, and it's one of those groups you can hang out in, not feel stressed about negative posts or anything like that. Fantastic job. So there's a big shout out to Simon. But Simon, as those of you who may be involved in the club know, has been pretty busy recently. He was up at Telford and helping out up there. So Joe Kopelman stepped in to send us a review. So this is Joe's reviews of 2019 books.
Hello, this is Joe Kopelman, and I'm part of the admin team for the Aviation Enthusiast Book Club group on Facebook. 2019 has been a remarkable year in aviation publishing, with dozens of strong, popular titles covering a range of subjects and eras being released within the past 12 to 18 months here. With the holidays coming up, I reached out to some of our group members for recommendations on what they think would be good gifts for aviation lovers this holiday season. Some of the most popular books among members of the Aviation Enthusiast Book Club focus on Soviet and Russian military aircraft, with Cressy Publishing's Famous Russian Aircraft series being a strong group favorite. This past year saw the release of books in this series on the Su-27, MiG-23-27, and MiG-29 families of aircraft. All three were authored by Yefim Gordon and Dmitry Komissarov, who have been doing this series for a while, and they do a phenomenal job with it. Harpia Publishing's books on Russian and Chinese air arms are another group favorite as well, with Pyotr Bukowski's Flashpoint Russia and Andreas Ruprecht's Modern Chinese Warplanes volume on Chinese Army Aviation being recent Harpia releases that have received a lot of positive reviews and positive attention within the group. Grub Street Publishing's Boys series is another popular series. This year they took a turn from their typical focus on the Cold War, and they released a book on the Bristol Bowfighter called Bowfighter Boys. It's a collection of personal accounts by bowfighter pilots, crews, maintainers, and that's just looking at World War II aircraft versus their traditional focus on the Cold War, and that one was written, I believe, by Graham Pitchfork. Another series with a strong level of interest in the book club is Osprey's Combat Aircraft series. The recent book that Peter Davies did on B-58 Hustler units has generated a lot of excitement. And then Warren Thompson's F-80 Shooting Star Units in the Korean War. That's just a book on America's first jet fighter bomber at war in Korea. And Warren Thompson always knocks it out of the park with his Korean War books. Just love reading his stuff on that. Firestreak Books, this year they put out two different titles that a lot of our members are pretty keen on. For those who look more for personal memoirs, Black Leader is a first-hand account of George Black's 37-year career in the RAF. And then for those who are fans of just solid, good photo books, Ian Black's Tornado Warlord is full of stunning images of the Panavia tornado in RAF service. With these books, you can check these out on firestreakbooks.com. That's primarily where you can find them. I believe you can also find them at the Aviation Bookshop in the UK as well. One of the more obscure subjects that's been written about this year was Allied aerial surveillance of East Germany during the Cold War. And you can read about this in Kevin Wright and Peter Jeffries' book, Looking Down Corridors, which was recently published by the History Press. My personal favorite book released within the past year is Making a Night Stalker, which was written by David Burnett. It's published by True South, and it's available through Amazon. This book follows Burnett through his career as a Special Operations Crew Chief aboard the MH-47 Chinook within the U.S. Army's 160th Special Operations Regiment. It's a pretty secretive world, and Burnett gives a really good look inside how aviators and crew chiefs for the 160th are screened, how they're trained, and kind of what their deployments look like when they go downrange in support of Rangers, Navy SEALs, Delta Force, and other Special Operations teams. Most of the titles that I mentioned are available through Amazon or other major booksellers, as well as through Simon Watson's Aviation Bookshop in Royal Tunbridge Wells in the UK, and also through the Aviation Megastore near Schiphol Airport in the Netherlands. And for anyone out there with an interest in aviation-related books, check out the Aviation Enthusiast Book Club on Facebook. We have over 4,500 members, including authors, editors, publishers, reviewers, and just a good, solid community of aviation fans from around the world. For the Aviation Enthusiast Book Club, I'm Joe Kopelman.
So, Gareth, Joe, in comparison to Andy earlier, a bit more modern in terms of the focus. Yeah. Some great books from Russia and China. I've read a few of the crazy books on the MiGs, and they are fabulous. So those have been added to my to my wish list.
Everyone still loves reading about MiGs and Sukhois, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah. Ever popular.
Yeah. So I don't know if the sort of myth is still there, even though so many of them are in operation with, I suppose we would now call friendly forces and much more open. We know so much more about them. But yeah, a lot of these are written from the Russian perspective, so they're fascinating. I really, really like reading about them, learning about them. It's something different. So there's a few in there to add to the list. Also, Bowfighter Boys, he mentioned. Joe mentioned Bowfighter Boys. Now, Tim has also read that book and was very excited about giving his feedback on that. Unfortunately, Tim obviously couldn't make it today, but if Tim recommends a book, it's normally pretty good. So another winner from Grub Street there. I remember making the Bowfighter, the Airfix Bowfighter, when I was younger. Don't know too much about it, so I might just have to add this one to my list as well.
Why not? What's anyone for?
Yeah, poor old Amanda. Was she going to look down my wish list for Christmas, my Amazon list, and think, I don't think so. So I might have to get a few sneaky ones myself. But No, some great books there from Joe. Also, Tornado Warlord there. Of course, Ian Black produces some spectacular books. So Fire Street
Books. I haven't seen that, but Tornadoes played a big part in my early part of the year this year because of all the retirement stuff we did on the website. So I might have to try and pick that up at some point.
They're always good from Ian. Content quality is just normally spectacular. So that one's highly recommended as well. A question I was going to ask you earlier, you're talking about your dad then. Have you ever got any intention of interviewing your dad about his service days?
I think he'd probably, you know what, he'd probably be up for that. I should probably do that, shouldn't I?
Because he was ground crew, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's done, funnily enough, he's done interviews with other people.
okay, and, not me, honest.
And when one of the first pieces I did for Global Aviation Resource, I did at a 15 squadron reunion, but I interviewed his old squadron boss, who sadly is no longer with us, but also the then boss of 15 squadron as well. So that was quite nice. But yeah, I should probably get dad's memories down
record,
shouldn't I?
You really should, and well worth doing as an exercise. So sorry, I digress there.
Oh, good chap.
Anyway, so I hope you've enjoyed those reviews. Our main interview is now with Dave Morris. And Dave Morris, for those of you who are regular listeners, know is the curator of aviation aircraft at the Fleet Air Arm Museum. And Dave talks to us now about two of his books. The first one is The Fleet Air Arm and Royal Naval Air Service in 100 Objects. And the second one is a book called Corsair KD-431. And that's all about the restoration of that airframe and the story behind it. So let's hear what Dave has to say. Dave, welcome back to Extended.
Hi, Peter.
Dave, of course, you are the curator of aircraft at the Fleet Air Arm Museum, but I didn't know this until I bumped into you at Air Day this year. You're also an author, and given that this is a book episode, thought we'd get you back on the line and have a chat about not only one, but two books. So tell me about the two books that you now have for us.
Well, both out this summer. I've done a couple of books over the years variously, but a bit like buses, there's nothing for ages and then suddenly two come along at once, and this summer is a bit indicative of that. One is a reprint, the Corsair project, the project where we took the museum's Corsair and picked and peeled and rubbed and scraped all of the paint from the 1960s away very meticulously and exposed underneath what we discovered was a totally authentic, totally original time capsule 1944 Corsair. We did a book on that when we first did the project and brought it to completion, and the first edition sold out. And the publishers didn't really go for a reprint, but they did get back in touch variously over the years, you know, since 2006, 2007, when the book first came out. They said, did we have any new findings? Because they would be interested in perhaps doing a reprint if we had new information or if we were able to conclude some areas which we hadn't proven in the first run. And the answer was always sort of no, no, and no. And then suddenly, about 18 months ago, two really interesting pieces of information came to light. One was about the Brewster aircraft parts going from the New York factory up to the Goodyear factory in Ohio to complete Corsair builds there. And that's something which people have sort of shaken their head and said, no, that wouldn't have happened. But we've found some really interesting information that's come to light literally in the last 18 months, which pretty well proves that is exactly what happened. And the second one was the big story about Godfrey Woodbine Parish and his supposed flight back from India and Ceylon in a Corsair at the end of the war, and that he flew home by aircraft and that's how he did it. That was always something which was a bit of a mystery, and we proved that he didn't do it in our Corsair, which is what people at first thought.
Oh, that's a shame.
it nearly comes to light because he was squadron CO of the fighter squadron had in Puttalam. But he trained at Yeovilton, and he got a call to come back to Great Britain immediately by air if possible. And he was a bit of a full-on fleet air and fighter pilot, and he had the authority and the rank and the position to say, okay, I'll fly then. but he didn't do it in a Corsair, and for years we never knew, and his daughters frustratingly never quite had the linchpin of what he meant in his story, and sadly Godfrey's long gone. But almost within the same month as we had the Brewster information came was a piece of new information. Ursula, one of the daughters, came to me and said, are you still interested in the Corsair? And I said, well, absolutely. And she said, we found Daddy's logbook.
Wow.
And it was an old outbuilding. They were clearing out some boxes and trunks in an old outbuilding. And there was his logbook and a little diary. He'd even kept the diary of his flight back. So we've been able to write up quite a piece of that. He did it not in a Corsair. He did it in a Wildcat. He flew all the way back from Ceylon in a Wildcat with extended range tanks, and there's all the stops along the way, and there's all kinds of little annotations in the diary, bits and pieces, and he flies back to Yeovilton, and he comes back home. You know, he literally goes back to his old fighter training school as his point of heading for home. So that rounded off the Corsair book beautifully. So the Corsair KD-431 revisited. We've gone back, so the Time Capsule Fighter revisited. That's the Corsair reprint out. This literally now just came out last month. So anybody that wants the updated story, okay, it's in there. Anybody that missed the book the first time around and has always wondered if they could get a copy, well, it's back out in print with the extra material. So that's kind of fun as well.
And so Dave, we did talk about the aircraft in an interview a few years back. What else did you discover when you scraped that paint away? What was the ultimate reveals?
Oh, that's such an interesting question, because it kept throwing up really interesting finds. We expected to find maybe one or two things along the way and a few traces of paint. We didn't expect to find an entire catalogue of World War II details and markings and interesting features. Hand-painted code letters on the nose from the factory, which weren't supposed to really last longer than factory delivery. Scribbles and markings on the insides of panels from factory workers, the remains of the tape marks from around the intakes and exhaust areas and the sensitive exposed areas to preserve it from exposed deck cargo transit across the Atlantic, a gas reactive paint patch for when it was in. Yeah, well, the aircraft was intended to go to Southeast Asia Command, and she was actually painted up in her Southeast Asia Command color change code colors and had a gas reactive patch put on, which starts to beg a few questions as to what they expected to face when they went east.
Yeah.
So the whole airplane is covered from front to back in a wealth of really, really fascinating 1944-45 totally authentic details. So the book chronicles all of this, literally everything we found inch by inch and how we understood what it was. So it's a pretty deep read.
Okay. And the title of the book again, Dave?
The title, it's Corsair KD-431, the time capsule aircraft revisited. So it's a revisited version of the first edition.
Wonderful, wonderful. Added that to my Christmas list. Now, I'm very excited. You did mention to me earlier this year you were working on a project. Tell us about the second book.
Well, the second book is a new book. It's not a re-edition. It is a brand new book. Publisher came to me and said, we've got a small series of books running military subjects. They'd been to various other sort of service units and said, you know, did they want to do a book X in 100 objects? And they said, would you be interested in doing the Royal Naval Air Service and Fleet Air Arm in 100 objects in a book?
Wow.
I said, well, that sounds interesting.
Awesome.
I said, okay. I was a bit cautious to start with. I said, all right, is there a theme and what 100 objects? And they very foolishly said, well, you're the curator of aircraft. You know the collection. You know the objects. You choose them. So I had a complete open card to choose 100 objects and write about them that I felt defined the services, the Royal Naval Air Service, the Fleet Air Arm, where naval aviation has come from, where it is today, in 100 objects. And yeah, it involved a lot of my colleagues. It wasn't just my choice yet to start with. I thought that's great.
Oh,
fun.
I bet interesting debates.
Yeah, we extended that across the whole patch. Yeah. All of the curators and archivists got involved and everybody had their pick.
Yeah.
And it is most definitely not just a boring old book on aircraft. I mean, we've pulled some archive stuff out which doesn't get the light of day as often as it should. We've crammed it full of objects that have really interesting significance, really interesting background, really interesting touches into how they define part of the service. So we go right the way back to the crow's nest on sailing ships, really, is where naval aviation starts. So one of the number one object in the book is the crow's nest, because that is it. It's all about getting higher, seeing over the horizon. How can you gain that advantage of looking over the horizon? What if you could get your crow's nest even higher? So then we look at man lifting kites and kite balloons. So they were sending men up on big man lifting kites tethered to a winch on the back of early Navy ships in a bid to get the crow's nest higher. And then, of course, ultimately, what happens if you could cut that crow's nest free and rove about beyond the horizon and come back to the ship with all of that vital information? So the whole theme really starts from why did the Navy even want to begin to get higher and go further for observation? And then it comes right the way up to date through an absolute mass of objects. Even got the ship's cat in there. It's everything in between. So, yeah, a good old Puss from HMS Eagle in his hammock. There's a picture of Puss in his hammock. He had his own ID card. He had his own rum ration and victualling card, which he shared with the crew, apparently.
Yeah, of course he did.
wasn't that generous?
yeah, very kind of him.
And such was Puss's, regard throughout the ship that when he finally met his days, the crew of HMS Eagle stitched him up in his hammock and in true fashion gave him a burial at sea.
Oh, bless.
So we've got everything. The Uckers board game, the sort of Navy version of Ludo, with all kinds of quirky rules. It is an absolute mass of really fascinating objects that when you stop and stand and look at our archive, we just thought, what a brilliant way of getting all of the things pictured and talked about, which we'd love to put on display, but there's never quite enough exhibition space or enough reason to have a series of objects out. And this was the platform to do it, and we just thought, brilliant idea.
And how's the book structured then, Dave? Is it pictorial? Is it wordy? How's it structured?
It's very, very pictorial. I mean, there's at least one picture of objects, and very often there's the picture of the object and then maybe an in-context picture to show why or how it was used. Or, I mean, the Wren's fighter direction control tricycles are a great example of that. Yes, I did say fighter direction control tricycles. The Great Britain at its quirky best, Great Britain solving a problem on half a shoestring, Great Britain being completely innovative in World War II. How do you teach really bright, and I mean seriously bright, radar control and fighter direction control, Wren radio operators? These girls were the top of the tree. They were either going to Bletchley Park to do code breaking, or they were going to go to fighter training school to do this fighter training control. But how do you teach them without putting an aircraft at risk, wasting fuel, endangering the pilot, taking an aircraft out of service? And they came up with a brilliant scheme of using stop me and buy one ice cream tricycles with a compass and a radio and a blind screen so they couldn't see where they were going. And very briefly, the plotting room table, like you see in the movies, is 10 feet square and gridded.
Yeah.
For instance, like the whole of the southwest of England. Outside is a 100-yard square of flat ground marked out into 100 by 100 squares, which they're pedaling around
on.
And that represents 100 miles square of airspace above them. Now, the key is they have to pedal whilst they're listening to their directions and their control instructions. They have to pedal at a very, very precise speed to equate to the airspeed in 100 miles of space. And to do that, they had a musician's metronome ticking away on the counter of their stop me and buy one tricycle. So it's about as low tech as you could possibly get, but it was brilliant. By the time these girls had trained up, they could keep five sets of tricycles roving around and intercepting and following patterns on that parade ground marking without colliding and without losing them. Absolutely brilliant piece of multitasking, so that's in the book. There's pictures of the objects, there's pictures in context.
Okay.
There's descriptions sufficient. I mean, I'd love to have written more, but often the template of a book limits you to so many sort of word count. But I think it's an interesting enough read, and with the pictures, it's definitely a very visual book, without a doubt.
I'm going to ask
and
you
to object 100. Just
I was
going to
say
right up to the back end.
Are you going
object
to tell us
100? Yeah, it's well, I guess we could tease you a bit there and say, well, who lived to be 113, was alive in three centuries, and had the potential to have seen every object in the book. By the time we were getting to the 100th object, it was clear to us what and who that object should be. And we just thought, yeah, that's got to be it. Alive in three centuries, lived to be 113, was in the Royal Naval Air Service in 1914, they've got to be in the book. And that's Henry Allingham, of course, dear old Henry, who was a Royal Naval Air Service air fitter. And yeah, he was alive in three centuries, and he had the potential to have seen every object in the book. And we thought, well, that's got to be the one that hits the 100 spot.
So. How wonderful. Well, Dave, thank you so much for that exclusive. I didn't think you were going to give it out. What's the price of the book, and how can people get hold of it?
That's a good question, actually. I think it's about £15.99,
okay.
I think, the 100 Objects book. Both of the books are available through the Fleet Air Arm Museum website shop. If you go on the Fleet Air Arm Museum website, follow the link to the shop. Books, of course, and both books are available there, and the museum can post nationally and internationally. So if anybody wants a copy, I think there's a mechanism there, they can even request a signed copy if they wish. So if you want one completely ruined, I can sign it as well.
As always, Dave, it's been fantastic to speak to you. Thanks so much for your time, and good luck with the books.
Yeah, thank you, Peter. It's a pleasure.
Extended. It's time to talk aviation. Email us now. Get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk. And remember, there's no E at the beginning of extended. Aviation questions, suggested topics, or even good old feedback are all welcome.
Okay, so that's the final one to go on my list. 100 objects.
your wish list is on about 3 pages now.
Yeah. It's pretty big. Well, I do have to get that, I suppose. That's one that will have to be done. I was intrigued. I wonder how many of the objects you can actually see in the museum. I might actually test that out with Dave.
That'd be like a checklist.
I'm going to take Beatrice up there maybe over Christmas. So we'll see if he can answer that question for us.
That's an excellent idea.
Yeah. So Dave, as we all know, knows his stuff. Those books will be very, very worthwhile reads. I know he has a few others in the pipeline as well, but he was saying to me he simply just doesn't have the time to produce them at the moment. So there's a couple more books out of Dave as well.
We mustn't forget that. I mean, a huge amount of work goes into producing every single one of these.
Yeah,
these books, you know, time and effort and money, and we're very lucky really that the market is I think thriving.
Yeah, and we've raced through 50 odd books in about an hour there.
Yeah,
can wax lyrical about many of them, but I will say one of the things that just pulling this exercise together has shown me is the massive amount of fantastic quality that's out there and being produced by authors not just in this country but all over the world. And some of those publishers, we've mentioned a few, and we'd love to mention everybody. You know, we just talked about Crazy there. There's Osprey Publishing, the History Press, and of course, you know, our friends at Grub Street and Font Hill as well, amongst many. But thousands of books. I literally could have listed thousands of books that have been published just this year. So it is a healthy sector. Obviously, competition for your time, for your money is great. So we hope we've done something to help you filter out some of those books, choose some of the ones you may be interested in. If you want to give us your feedback on the books you've read, maybe we haven't mentioned them, maybe we have mentioned them and you don't agree with us or the reviewers or the authors, then do contact us. You know, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook as well. A couple of bookshops we want to also give a mention to. Of course, there is the fantastic bookshop down in Kent, the aviationbookshop.com. And also the aviationmegastore.com as well. Don't forget the Aviation Enthusiast Book Club and Simon's group there over on Facebook, as well as Andy Wright's Aircrew Review Book Club as well. So we got links to all of those in the show notes or in your podcast notes. Okay, that's it. We'd like to thank White Hearts and Peter Dixon for their contribution to the show. We'd also like to thank Mick Oakey and his team at the Aviation Historian, who always help to promote the program. Big thank you to John at Grub Street for his support on producing this episode, and to Jay at Font Hill for their ongoing support of Extended. Both of them have got great offers on at the moment. I mentioned earlier that Grub Street are doing several of their books signed by the authors at some pretty sharp prices. But I've also been looking at the Font Hill site in the last week or two. They've got 30% off of almost all of the aviation books at the moment. So well worth going over there and picking up some of the books that we've heard mentioned today. So I suppose that leaves me with a question, Gareth. What's on your reading pile next?
I almost don't know where to begin. I'll tell you, actually, because it's, if I can find it, it's right next to me. So when I gave Dad the books for his 80th, yep. One of them was so brilliant
that he stole it back.
When I next saw him, I stole it back from him. Hang on, talk amongst yourselves.
Okay, well, let me tell you what's on my my next read. Once I've finished the Stuka book I mentioned earlier, which I'm pretty much over halfway through, Christmas present, I've got, and this is a Font Hill book, this isn't a freebie, I paid for it, Amanda paid for it, Christmas present, is 806 Naval Air Squadron, the Fleet Air Arms top scoring fighter squadron of the Second World War. So that's,
oh, nice.
That's on my, yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. I haven't seen too many reviews of it, so I don't know what it's like, but it does look good. I'm also a bit of a sucker for a cover. If it's got a good cover... It normally, I know. I'm so lightweight.
You're a marketeer's dream.
I know. I do. And the book cover on that one looks pretty good. So I snapped it up, and that's my next one to read. So hopefully okay, that will.
So I've got mine. It was actually right next to me. I just couldn't see it for looking. This is Adventures of a Cold War Fast Jet Navigator, The Buccaneer Years. It's by Wing Commander David Herriot, and it's a pen and sword.
Yeah.
Book it is, my dad literally said he flew through it and absolutely loved it, so yeah. It's literally all about the Buccaneer.
I saw that one. Oh god, you're gonna have to send me the link. I'm gonna have to add that one. We're going to add that one to the list as well. Another great publisher as well, Pen and Sword. They got some great content as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, we'd like to thank all of the contributors for this episode, authors, reviewers. I think they did a fabulous job. Some were pretty nervous when I asked them to record a few minutes, but I think without fail, they all did a fabulous job.
They did. And listen, you did a fantastic job pulling it all together. So insert round of applause at this point.
No, do you know the great thing about this sector is sometimes if you put your hand out and ask for something, there's always somebody to help you. I found that with this episode, there's been a great number of people who've wanted to contribute, have wanted to help. So hopefully we've done something a bit different with books this time. There are some other areas of the sector we're interested in doing similar programs. We might do one like this on podcasts, for instance, helping to promote aviation and aerospace podcasts. So that might be one maybe for next year. But this has definitely got traction. I think we'll do it again next year. And in the meantime, of course, we'll have some authors on the show to talk about their books specifically. But if you've enjoyed this episode and you want to comment, let us have some feedback, either through your podcast playing app, on our Facebook page, or say hi to us on Twitter. You can find Extended Now on all popular podcast players, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Player FM, and Podbean. Our legal policy and use of our material can be found on our website, but do ask before using anything you hear. The program's produced with a Creative Commons license. So, Gareth, whereabouts can we find you on that big old internet?
So, I'm Gareth_Stringer on Twitter. You'll find Global Aviation Resource at GAviationR on Twitter and Global Aviation Resource on Facebook. And have a look at the website, guys, because there's a load of content on there. We've been posting a load of stuff recently. We're not as frequent as we used to be, but there's stuff on there from Naval Air Station Fallon and El Centro and Colombia, Russia.
Is that the Paul Filmer stuff?
So Paul's published, we published a couple of pieces from him, one from Colombia and one from Max at Zhukovsky.
Yep. That was awesome.
Russian Federation, which is, they're just sort of pictorial reviews, but they're, you know, very, very popular. And we've just started pushing out our 10th anniversary series, where each member of the team is picking their favourite piece. So Rob Edgecombe pushed his interview with Clay Lacy of Learjet fame. Yep. And spoiler alert, I've got a huge piece coming out that I originally did for our digital magazine called When I Was on Lightnings.
Watch out for that. You can find Tim on Twitter, RAES Tim R, of course. and the Royal Aeronautical Society at aerosociety.com. You can find me at Nascot Hornet on Twitter, and of course you can always say hi on the Facebook page. So that, with the arrival of the music, it's goodbye from Gareth.
Okay, thanks for listening.
And it's goodbye from me, Peter Johnson. Remember, stay tuned to this frequency. That is, of course, Aerospace Radio Station Extended.
Extended would like to thank its partners, Global Aviation Resource, the Royal Aeronautical Society, and XTP Media, for their support in helping to present and produce the programme.
The cockpit's very cramped, you've got leg restraints on, you're sat on a seat that's got explosives in it.
Just taking me on the trip of a lifetime in a F-18F Super Hornet.
Thanks for listening to Extended. We'll see you next time. And don't forget, we want you to contact us. So get involved at aviation-extended.co.uk is the email address you need. Extended.
This is XTP Media.